Welcome to All Sides with Amy Jurevich. This is Fascinating Ohio, a show where we introduce you to people from the Buckeye State with an interesting story to tell. And former Ohio State defensive end Jack Sawyer of Pickerington certainly has an interesting story to tell. In fact, some of the key moments in his young life have been played out in front of millions of people, including his now famous Scoop and Score play in the Cotton Bowl. And as a part of Ohio State's winning college football's big prize as well. Jack Sawyer, welcome to Fascinating Ohio.
Hey guys, thanks for having me on. I appreciate it.
Well, you are a busy guy, so thanks for making time for this interview. Now, we are taping this a few days before the NFL draft, and when our listeners hear it, it will be on the day of the draft, April 24th. We will get to the draft in just a minute, but first, I wanted to start with your visit to the White House. You were one of several Ohio State football players to be singled out by President Trump for their play on the field. Here's a snippet of what he had to say.
With 2:29 on the clock, hometown legend Jack Sawyer. Boy, that's a good name. Jack Sawyer. It sounds like the name of a legend, right?
What was that experience like, being at the White House and having the president call you a legend?
Oh, it was. It's a surreal moment. You know, growing up, you never expect to be able to shake the president's hand or be inside the Oval Office. So, you know, all of us, we were, you know, super excited and super fortunate that they invited us out. And it was such a cool experience. You know, I had no idea that any of us were going to get singled out and be, you know, have an opportunity to go up there and shake President Trump's hand. But it was awesome. And it was a great experience for sure.
You didn't know ahead of time that he was going to start saying certain players' names?
I had no idea. Nope. It just happened in the moment. No one gave us a heads up or anything.
Well, you all handled it in stride then, if you didn't know. You also got to see the Oval Office up close. What was like your whole time at the White House? What was that like for you?
It was a great experience. We got to see a lot of cool things. Got to, you know, talk to a lot of people you know you would never really get a chance to talk to before. And being inside the Oval Office, you know, it was cool, all the history that's in there. And you see the Declaration of Independence framed and hanging. And you just realize, you know, wow, like that's maybe the most important document, you know, in U.S. history. So, you know, it's pretty cool just being able to, you know, experience something like that most people don't get to experience. I wouldn't have a chance to experience if it wasn't for the things that the Ohio State University, you know, offers and brings to you. And the stuff that, you know, we achieved as a family and as a brotherhood out there on the field this year. So it's just super cool to know that if you stick with it and stick together, that, you know, anything's possible, anything's in reach of attaining. So definitely it was a cool experience, and knowing that the reason we were able to do those things is because, you know, a group of guys who love each other came together and won a national championship.
And big Buckeye fan, Vice President J.D. Vance was there as well. He had a little trouble with the championship trophy. did you feel bad for him there?
Yeah, you know, it was funny. Kind of just all of a sudden you hear a big thud on the stage and you look over and the trophy's on the ground. But to his credit, a lot of people have dropped that trophy out of that case because, you know, you think that it's stuck in that little case it has, but it comes out. And obviously, you know, he wasn't aware of that and kind of fumbled it a little bit, but happened to a lot of us, so can't give him too much flack.
Yeah, well, you get to get that fumble pun in there for the football trophy. You know, it all works out.
exactly.
Yeah, and I have to say that all the players cleaned up quite nicely for your White House visit. A lot of great suits on that stage. Did you have to spruce up your wardrobe for that event?
You know, thankfully, I had a pretty good suit that I felt I felt good about that I wore to Big Ten Media Day a few months before last season. So had to pull that out and find that thought it was nice and thought it would fit pretty good. And everyone else, man, they had great suits on. Like you said, everyone was dressed to the nine, and you know, it was fun.
All right, so let's move on to the NFL draft. Big thing coming up for you. What kind of preparation have you been doing to get ready for draft day?
Yeah, I mean, it's been kind of a surreal, you know, experience, you know, going through the whole, you know, getting ready for the combine and getting ready for the pro day and coming back to Columbus and then getting, you know, one last chance to compete out there with your brothers and the place you played for the last four seasons. And then now it's just, you know, staying in shape. You know, it's trying to get into football shape and getting back to the basics of playing football and not so much training for anything specific. And you know, Zooms and meetings with different teams have gone well, and it's been a really busy busy process, but you know, I'm excited just to figure out, you know, where I'm going to live and what organization I'm going to go to and give everything I got to. So I'm ready for draft night. Definitely.
Now, only 17 players are invited to the actual in-person event in Green Bay, Wisconsin. There's one from Ohio State, Josh Simmons, I believe, the offensive tackle will be there. But where will you be to be watching it?
I'll be out with my parents. Okay. I will be out here at my parents where I'm at right now and just enjoying it with them because, you know, without them, you know, I wouldn't be here and spend it with the people I love that mean the most to me. So that's the people I want to be surrounded by on draft night. And, you know, I'm looking forward to it and hopefully hear my name called sooner than later. So the anticipation doesn't eat me up, but I'm excited for it. And I'll be out here with my parents, my family.
Now, I don't want to make you predict the future, but I'm going to ask, what round do you expect to go in?
Yeah, to be honest with you, it's kind of a big range for me. You know, it's anywhere between late first to middle of third. So, you know, I have no idea. Hopefully I go, you know, as early as possible. But, you know, wherever God's got me going, you know, I'm happy and excited for. And, you know, I know he's got me and there's no reason to stress about anything.
And people are literally placing bets on when you'll go in the draft. I guess people have been placing bets on a lot of aspects of your entire football career. What do you think about that?
You know, I think it's fun. I think it's fun. You know, everyone enjoys that stuff. And definitely the fans get into it. And, you know, it's a fun time. You know, it's a fun experience for me. And obviously, you know, the fans, like you said, they bet on a lot of things. So it's probably just another one of them to be, you know, see who is right and who is wrong. Who's the best armchair quarterback, you know, so. It's all in good fun to me.
Do you have a dream team you want to play for? Or you probably don't want to say that.
Yeah, no, I don't. What's funny is I don't really have necessarily a dream team that I'd like to play for. You know, I've been telling people whichever team wants to get me the earliest is the team I want to play for. So, like I said, you know, I'm just excited wherever I go, wherever God has me landing, I'll be excited and extremely happy to get to work with that organization. And I'm looking forward to figuring that out here soon.
You know, the Browns are working on a new dome stadium and they need someone to help turn around their losing streak. Joe Burrow might want another former Ohio State player. He could use some more defenders. Do you hope to maybe stay in Ohio?
Well, yeah, I think if that does happen, you know, if one of those Ohio teams decide to, you know, to invest in me and drafting that, I think it'd be awesome. You know, I think it definitely would be cool to stay in Ohio for the whole time. But at the same time, you know, whoever decides to draft me, you know, I'll be super excited. But, you know, the theoreticals about staying in Ohio would definitely be fun and they're fun to talk about. But, you know, I'm just focused on, you know, whoever gets me.
All right. Your new favorite team is the one that picks you, right?
Exactly. Right.
You're listening to Fascinating Ohio from All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. And we're talking with former Ohio State defensive end Jack Sawyer. And you came to Ohio State as a 5-star recruit. You enrolled a semester early. You stayed. And then this happened.
Sawyer knocked it up and picks it up. Jack Sawyer headed down the sidelines. Ohio State scoop and score.
How many times have you heard that clip?
I've heard it a good number of times, that's for sure.
And so that play was the one that sealed the win for Ohio State in the Cotton Bowl against Texas, sending the Buckeyes to the national championship game with Notre Dame. Now, the Texas quarterback who you stripped the ball from was your former roommate. He's a former Buckeye before he transferred. Have you talked to him a couple of times after that play?
Yeah, I have. You know, Quinn's a great guy. He's a great kid and super good player. And we always used to joke around about, you know, if we ever get to play each other, you know, I'm going to get you. And so then, you know, we haven't really talked too much just because we're so busy. And, you know, obviously that play happens and we beat them. And fast forward to the combine a few months later, I'm getting my coffee in the morning and someone shoves me in my back like pretty hard. And I kind of turn around like, who the heck just shoved me like that? And Quinn's standing there. And he's laughing and, you know, he gives me a hug. I mean, we sit down and talk for a minute, you know, and, you know,
he was like, he's like, you owe me a coffee. I bet.
Yeah. He's like, you owe me a steak dinner. But, you know, what's funny is, you know, he's such a good dude. And, you know, I hope he has a great career in the NFL. And it's funny that, you know, it's unique that play happened against him. And, but like I said, he had a great career at Texas, you know, great person, great teammate. But it is funny, you know, looking back on it, you know, me and him, one of my good buddies here at Ohio State, roomed with me. And then fast forward a couple years later, I'm sacking him. So it's a funny experience.
How have you felt over the past few months, you know, winning a national championship? Have you come down from the high? It's been a few months.
Yeah. You know, I think it what's funny is we were all talking about it. You know, it didn't really sink in, you know, until like a month after the fact, you know, because we were so, you know, locked into the fact that, you know, we're just going to go and attack every week. And then once you do it and you finish it and you win it all, you're kind of like, all right, well, who's our next opponent? You know what I mean? And for us, you know, it kind of took a little bit for us to settle in and realize like what we actually did. And I think coming back and everyone being back and, excuse me, getting our rings and being able to watch the plays and the highlights from a different perspective kind of made it fully sink in for us. And it's been a fun experience. You know, it's just such a good thing for Columbus and for Coach Day and the team and the program that we're just so thankful that we're able to do that. And to answer your question, I don't think we'll ever come down from this high, winning the national championship. You know, it's something that I think will always forever be special for us and Coach Day and the university. So it was awesome.
Now, you were at the spring game as a spectator. What was that like to be a spectator for the first time?
Yeah, it was weird. You know, I walked in, and when we walked in, we kind of walked on like right as the first drive was happening. Coach Jay came over and gave us all a hug, and I was like, man, feels weird, doesn't it? First time in 5 years I'm not out there playing in this. And he's like, it does. He's like, you got one more year left? You sure you don't want to play one more year? And we just started laughing. And but no, it was a cool experience. You know, again, I'm happy and excited for these guys upcoming season. I think they're going to be great, you know, again. And the coaching staff's doing a great job. And it was definitely unique being there as a spectator, having graduated now and knowing that I'm done at Ohio State. But knowing that we went off the way we went off makes it a lot sweeter.
Now, you're young. You're 22. You're embarking on a professional football career. But what do you take away from your years at Ohio State?
Yeah, I take away a lot of things. I think, you know, for me, I learned a lot about myself as a football player, but I think I also learned a lot about myself as a man too, you know, how to go about your business and how to be a professional on and off the field. And, you know, the lessons and the things you learn along the way, you know, through 4 years of playing at Ohio State, it's, you know, nothing tops it. So I learned how to get my body right. I learned how to, you know, show up a little earlier to the facility. I learned how to maybe stay a little later at the facility, and the things that Ohio State teaches you about being a man as well, you know, carry with me for the rest of my life. So my 4 years at Ohio State, I couldn't have asked for anything better, for a better experience, the ups and the downs. And it was just great.
And how do you feel when you think of like hometown, Pickerington, Columbus, you know, if you're drafted by a team that's not in Ohio, will you take the city with you?
Yeah, I hope so. I hope everyone that's from Columbus and Pickerington and Ohio, you know, become fans of wherever I go. So that's definitely the dream. You know, I think that hopefully a lot of people will still keep rooting for me, even if I go somewhere else, or maybe even a rival of an Ohio team. But yeah, it's going to be fun. It's going to be exciting.
And the Columbus Dispatch had a touching story about your friendship with a teen from Mentor who shared the same name with you, Jack B. Sawyer. Mm-hmm. He had a rare form of cancer, which unfortunately took his life, but you continue to honor him. Can you tell me a little more about that?
Yeah, I mean, I remember him reaching out to me going into my junior year, and, you know, I heard his story and got a chance to talk to him. I'm like, man, I want to send him something, you know, I want to help him and give him anything that can, you know, brighten his day. So I sent him a few things and a poster I signed for him. And ever since then, you know, we just stayed in contact, and he actually got to ring the bell in my junior year and was hurt before my junior year and was cancer free. And then, you know, sadly it came back later that year, and stayed in contact, was able to talk to him, and, you know, just such a great kid and had my name. It's from the same state as me and was battling, you know, something every day. And anything I could have done to brighten his day, you know, he had no idea how much he brightened my day with being able to see how strong he is and how he was able to persevere every day battling something that, you know, he had no control over. So, you know, he's still will forever hold a special place in my heart. And I talked to his parents still. And just great people, too. So, you know, I plan on continuing honoring him on my wrist tape every game I play.
Wow. Yeah. And I mean, I guess just as a last question, tell me about the transcendent nature of football. You know, it's just a game, but it means so much to so many people. And the fact that you won the national championship and you made everyone proud and you're the hometown guy who went to Ohio State. What does that all mean to you?
Yeah, it means everything to me. You know, it's, you know, God is so great, and the things He's blessed me to be able to do, and places I've been able to go and experience, you know, just from going and playing at Ohio State and the gifts that He's blessed me with. You know, I'm forever grateful for everything. And just, you know, we always talk about it on the team is that, you know, always being grateful for where you're at and, you know, waking up every day and realizing how blessed you are just to be able to get up and play the game that we play. Here in Columbus, you know, for me being from Pickerington, you know, just 15 minutes down the road, you know, it's a dream come true to be able to put on the scarlet and gray and do what we were able to do and win a national championship and bring it back to Columbus. You know, it's something that you dream about doing since you were a little kid, and to be able to go out there and do it, you know, we just thank God for everything. And it was such a cool experience to be able to do that growing up 15 minutes from there.
Well, thank you so much for your time. Former Ohio State player and forever Ohio State champion. Thank you, Jack Sawyer.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate it.
And good luck in the draft.
Thank you. Thank you. Thanks, guys.
And coming up next, we're going to go on a pursuit for the perfect suit with the owner of a popular Short North store. This is Fascinating Ohio from All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube. But what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY. Welcome to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich, and this is Fascinating Ohio, a show where we introduce you to people from the Buckeye State with an interesting story to tell. Do you need a new suit for your next pursuit? Well, we have just the place for you. It's Pursuit. Pursuit Fashions can be found on some star athletes around Columbus, and their store is located in the Short North and has even had its suits featured on Jimmy Kimmel Live. We're talking with founder and CEO of the company, Nate DeMars. Welcome to All Sides, Nate.
Thanks for having me.
So first things first, why suits? How did you get into the suit business?
Back in 2011, I was a graduate student in the MBA program here at Ohio State and was a fashion novice who needed a suit and had a pretty lackluster experience at the department store I went to buy one at. Mm-hmm. And then I looked around campus, career fair day, not too far from where we're sitting right now, and I saw, holy cow, there are 10,000 people with the exact same need for a suit on the exact same day. And I was in an entrepreneurship class, and that started as a class project idea. And 15 years later, it's what I do.
Yeah. Were you interested at all in fashion and tailoring, or was it more you looked around and saw a lot of people in some bad fitting suits?
I do like to say I was a business person first, but I also joke my fashion resume, I had one thing on it when I started Pursuit. I was the best dressed Ashland High School in Ashland, Wisconsin, which is a very remote rural place in northern Wisconsin, back in 2001. So that
you won best dressed like in your high school yearbook?
In my high school yearbook. And that was pretty much it. But it was a surprise to everybody.
And if it was 2001, I'm betting you were wearing some oversized jeans and not a suit.
Correct, yeah.
Yes. So as an OSU alumnus with your MBA, do you feel like in your business, are you using your business sense more, or are you like using what you've learned like on the ground in fashion each day?
I think in the second half, if I've been doing this for almost 15 years, the second half of that, I find myself leaning away from a lot of the spreadsheets and business and trying to lean more into the creativity and the being a fashion guy. Mm-hmm. But I think early on, my skill set was being able to, you know, think analytically about a business. So I've said that I've learned to become a fashion person, and I think I've gotten more creative, and I've really found a way to make Pursuit something that can be a creative outlet for myself.
What made you decide to name it Pursuit?
That's one of the few things that I think from that first pitch in class has stuck. And I think the idea then, inspired by all the students getting dressed up that one day for career fair, was people get dressed up in a suit for whatever it is that's kind of the next big thing in their life. So I think there's this idea that anytime you get dressed up, you're in pursuit of something big, some big milestone moment in your life. And so a good pun and some, you know, symbolism.
Everyone loves a good pun too. Yeah. So a suit can be thought of as like a standard thing. You know, suits look one way, but actually they're a way to express your personality if you have the right stylist. A good example would be from the NFL draft. The players are always very decked out in suits. I can still remember Ezekiel Elliott showing up in the draft many years ago in that suit with the crop top, which was similar to the way he wore his jersey. Have you ever made some unique, unconventional looks like that, like a crop top suit?
Never done a crop top suit, although that was another suit company in Columbus who did that one. We certainly have done a lot of unique things over the years. And I think probably the one that you referenced a little bit earlier that was maybe the most seen or talked about, a local band called Camp, who's gotten to be pretty large, performed in our concert series way back and have been friends of the shop. And we made them some really funky lavender suits when they came out with their Lavender Days album. And those are the ones that, you know, they wore on Jimmy Kimmel and at Nationwide Arena. And that was just a very striking, loud suit that got a lot of comments.
Did they ask for that, or did you? They asked for that kind of suit.
They did. One of the fun things about my life is that I have my little place in the community, and then creative people who find themselves needing clothing like this, you know, they come to me with ideas and say, hey, this is what I'm thinking. And they know that we're able to bring it to life for them. And so it gives me an excuse to kind of tag along on some fun projects.
So it's like, I'm going to be on Jimmy Kimmel Live. My album has the word lavender in it. Go.
Yeah, exactly.
Okay. Now, the Ohio State football team was just at the White House recently celebrating their national championship, and they were all looking very good. A number of them were sporting suits from your store, right?
Yeah, I think from my rough math, it was about 50% of the guys that were there were wearing pursuit suits that they had gotten either very hastily before this trip or over the previous few years of us working with a lot of football players.
What goes into designing a suit for an athlete who may be bigger or taller or have more muscles in places that the average person doesn't have muscles?
Yeah, I think we do suits two different ways. Off-the-rack suits that we tailor to fit and custom suits that we make for people. And I think oftentimes football players and other athletic build people, really a custom-made suit is what they need to get the fit right. They keep muscle in places, typically biceps and quads, that normal clothing patterns aren't made for. And I think you see a lot of times if somebody of that build walks into a store at the mall and just grabs something, they may want it to be, you know, fitted or wear it close to the body, but they're not engineered like a slim fit pant is engineered. So for us to be able to make suits that fit the way people want them to fit, but not have the pitfalls that most off the rack suits have. And oftentimes for us, that's demonstrative of what we're able to do for what I would call everyday people, who maybe think they're a difficult fit. And then they see we dress the offensive line every year and they say, oh,
If you can make it fit the offensive line, I think you make it fit me. Yeah. You've also outfitted the women's volleyball team. You have a partnership with the Columbus Fury. There's a great photo of them on your website. Can you describe that look for the Columbus Fury? We're not just talking about you do suits for all genders.
Yeah. And I think because we've been around so long and been known primarily as a men's clothing store, even though that is not all we've been for many years, this is a high profile way for us to show that we do more traditional feminine styled suits. So women's suits are really kind of in vogue right now. If you watch awards ceremonies, you see celebrities on red carpet, oftentimes you're seeing suits where there would have been gowns before. So we did unique three-piece suits for each of the different 16 players on the Fury, and they styled the vests almost like a sleeveless shirt, and each of them was able to pick their own fabric and their own fit so that their look was different than their teammates. And it's just a fun way. When we do projects, we try to do projects with entire groups or entire teams, as opposed to picking off one star or whoever has the most followers on Instagram. And that allows us to kind of be a part of the team culture and see the dynamic in the locker room. And it just makes it like, we do the same with the crew. It just kind of embeds us in the culture of the team. And then we get to show off a whole lot of styles.
You also mentioned that you have worked with some of the players expected to be drafted in the NFL draft, including Ohio State's Josh Simmons, the only Buckeye invited to attend the draft in person. Can you give us a preview of his suit, or are we keeping it a secret?
Yeah, I believe actually Josh is no longer going to the draft from what I understand. Okay. Yes.
Okay. Well, then he still has a suit,
but he does have a suit, and we went with a pretty classic, more of a traditional all-black fitted suit. Mm-hmm. And a lot of times what we find is a lot of our friends on the offensive line are maybe a little more understated mm-hmm. than some of the positions that are maybe more limelight-type mm-hmm. positions. So that's not always true, but a lot of the guys in the trenches prefer to be a little more toned down.
Right, right. This is Fascinating Ohio from All Sides, and we're talking about what it takes to make a good custom suit so that all shapes, sizes, and styles can feel comfortable with Nate DeMars, CEO and founder of the local suit shop Pursuit. You have outfitted other OSU sports teams, right? The basketball team?
Yeah, that was a different type of project. We worked with some notable alumni, Michael Redd, Mark Titus, Clark Kellogg, and did suits for the entire basketball team as kind of a way, you know, myself as somebody whose business started here on campus in a classroom, those three guys who are all living some pretty remarkable lives and having amazing careers that they credit their time at Ohio State. So that project was our way of kind of giving back to current students in a way that felt like it was recognizing what Ohio State did for all of us.
How does it feel to have your suits featured in prestigious events? You know, you mentioned being on Jimmy Kimmel Live. I'm sure that people sometimes probably take a screenshot off the TV and be like, is this your suit?
I get a lot of that. And what's been kind of fun over the years is it's not something we've ever really sought out. And there is kind of an ecosystem of folks whose business is really centered on things like drafts and high profile folks. And what we've done instead is just tried to be very grassroots in the community. And over time, a lot of the people we've worked with are now at places in their lives and careers. So it's nice when the call comes in and somebody says, hey, I have this important thing coming up and I'd love to work with you, as opposed to me cold calling somebody or hitting them in their DMs. But it is fun. And it is fun how wide the variety of situations are. And in the same day, we can be doing suits for people that are going so many different places, who are such completely different profiles of customers. And all of it feels really special because it just feels like we're able to adapt what we do to the individual.
Tell me about expanding your business beyond being just a men's clothing company. How did you branch out like that?
I think a lot of the evolutions over the years with the company have been really because people come to us and ask us, will we do things? And I think one of the first surprises early on in our business was we have had a pretty sizable female clientele, primarily, I would say, lesbian brides for their weddings, who have sought us out wanting what I think most would describe as a more traditional menswear styled suit. Mm-hmm. And that has become for us a pretty sizable part of our business, that people travel states away to mm-hmm. shop with us, because it's not common. You know, our biggest competitor nationally has the word men's in their name.
Right. Yeah.
So I think, you know, we've always kind of struggled with the question of, do you do women's suits? Because we always have. Mm-hmm. But I think oftentimes when people ask that question, they're thinking of more traditionally feminine styled suits like you would see in the women's department at a Nordstrom. And that's something now since roughly COVID, I think 2020, we were planning to do a big launch of our feminine cut suits.
No one needed to go anywhere.
No one needed anything that we did. But that was our way of saying we do all definitions of if it's a suit, I think we probably got you covered and other things too.
Tell me about your Good Intentions program. What have you been able to accomplish for the community with that?
Yeah, this is an initiative that has been long dreamt about, but we hadn't quite figured out how to make it work. And the idea is that we really get hit up constantly to support things throughout the community and, you know, love to when we can, often nonprofit related. And I just got really tired of the donating something to a silent auction. Mm. Here's a $500 gift card that you're going to sell to a wealthy person for $300 so that the $300 goes to the nonprofit. It just felt like a very inefficient use of our limited resources. But we've done projects where we see what happens when you put somebody who otherwise could not afford a suit, doesn't think it's attainable, you let them come into that same cool store in the Short North and get the same experience in the same suit that somebody would pay $1,000 for, and that has a value to them that is far greater than even what the price tag is. And we'd seen that a couple times, and we thought, how do we just make this a thing? How do we cultivate this? So last year, we decided we were going to make it very public that we wanted to do this. And we started with, first year we had, I think it was ended up being 9 different nonprofits. And the idea was, let's find people who already work doing just important, critical things in the community with deserving folks, and just kind of come alongside the work they're already doing and provide this really special experience and this kind of cherry on top of programming. And man, it took a long time to come up with that idea, and it is by a mile the best thing we've ever done. Like, our team gets way more excited about that than these other high profile partnerships, which are also really cool, because there's just a different level of excitement and appreciation in that scenario.
And you also mentioned it earlier, you have the Pursuit Concert Series. Tell me, I'm in Pursuit, right? In Pursuit Concert Series. Tell me about that.
Yeah. My wife would tell you that Pursuit is really just an excuse for me to take whatever it is I'm interested in and call it work. And the concert series really originated by me just trying to get some of my favorite bands to play a show in my shop.
Yeah.
I have prime real estate in the Short North. And so we have had this series. The very first concert was a band from Minnesota called Low, who I love dearly. And that was when we were a little pop-up shop on campus. And the idea is, we put people in suits and they play a concert in the store. And, you know, the suits are just kind of along for the ride. And if people are paying attention, it's great marketing. And at the very least, it is a really fun way for me to bring my interest inside the walls of the store.
Do you have any future goals for the company? I mean, I'm sure you do. You're a business major. Do you see yourself expanding at all, or where do you see yourself in 5-10 years?
Yeah, that question, when you asked about, you know, seeing myself more as a business person or as a fashion person, I would have given you more of an MBA answer about scaling.
Yeah.
And these days, I'd give you an answer of, I'm having more fun doing what I'm doing now and doing more things that I'm excited and passionate about than ever before, and I just want to keep that going. So perhaps we will have more stores in the future, but only if it doesn't come at the expense of getting to do all this other stuff that we've talked about.
Do you have any dream celebrity that you've pursued or you're in pursuit of? I need to say the pun correctly.
Yeah, I think I've joked that because I am from northern Wisconsin, Duluth, Minnesota area, I try to have everybody notable from there, musicians primarily. So we've worked with Bon Iver, and we've worked with Low, and we've worked with Trampled by Turtles, and Bob Dylan is from Duluth. So the most unrealistic goal that I have is to have Bob Dylan in the shop someday.
I'm sure, Bob Dylan, if you're listening, you know, come get a suit. All right. Well, I want to thank you so much for your time. Thank you, Nate DeMars, CEO and founder of the local suit shop, Pursuit. Thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And coming up, we're going to talk to the organizer of the upcoming Hell City Tattoo Festival here in Columbus. That's when All Sides and Fascinating Ohio continues on 89.7 NPR News.
This is Tanya Mosley, co-host of Fresh Air. You'll see your favorite actors, directors, and comedians on late-night TV shows or YouTube, but what you get with Fresh Air is a deep dive. Spend some quality time with people like Billie Eilish, Questlove, Ariana Grande, Stephen Colbert, and so many more. We ask questions you won't hear asked anywhere else. Listen to the Fresh Air podcast from NPR and WHYY.
You're listening to All Sides. I'm your host, Amy Jurevich. This is Fascinating Ohio, a show where we introduce you to people from the Buckeye State with an interesting story to tell. You've probably seen billboards in and around town about the Hell City Tattoo Festival. It's coming up in just a couple of weeks. Whether you're looking for a tattoo or just a fan of the culture, the festival has a lot to offer. And the festival organizer, who is Columbus-born and raised, also has the largest tattoo studio in the state and even started his own tattoo products company. Joining us is Derb Morrison, owner of Red Tree Tattoo Gallery and the head organizer of the upcoming Hell City Tattoo Festival in Columbus. Thanks for joining us today, Derb.
Definitely. Good morning. How you doing?
Now, we'll get to the festival in just a couple of minutes, but first I want to talk about your tattooing history. How long have you been tattooing?
You know what? I started tattooing my friends when I was only 13 years old.
Oh,
that's
dear.
Why I've had such a long tattoo career already.
Yeah.
You know, I've been tattooing about 39 years now, professionally about 35 years, you know, in studios. I started tattooing professionally right out of high school. You know, back in 1991, there wasn't a lot of tattooing in Columbus. Mm-hmm. You know, and it was an art form that fascinated me, you know. Not only was it kind of a rebellious art as a child, you know, growing up skateboarding and listening to punk music and things like that, tattoos kind of went hand in hand. I was already an artist as a child, too. So when I found tattooing, it's kind of like I found an art form that was for me. Not a lot of people were doing it, you know. And now looking back, I'm so glad that I stuck with it. Didn't listen to people telling me not to tattoo, and it's been an amazing life, an amazing career.
Can you tell us a little bit more about that journey? You know, you are a very prominent member of the Columbus tattoo community. How did you see yourself? You know, that 30 years ago, did you see yourself being like the predominant tattoo artist in Columbus?
I mean, I was always motivated with tattooing, and I knew that I kind of had a purpose with tattooing from a younger age too. You know, to represent tattooing in the best light that I could, you know, and create a positive picture of tattooing and tattoo art, especially here in Columbus, Ohio, and just Ohio in general. Did I know where it was going to take me? Tattooing's taken me around the world. I travel the world. I judge a lot of different tattoo conventions, competitions, and things like that. So, I never knew where it was going to take me. But once I realized kind of what tattooing was giving me in life, I just continue to give back to it. You know, and I wake up every day and I think about tattooing and what I can do for tattooing, things like that. So it's been an amazing journey.
Yeah. What's your favorite thing about tattooing?
Tattooing to me is the connection of the client and the artist. You know, the things us as tattoo artists, we get to hear, it's kind of like a therapy session sometimes for our clients, you know, and the things that we hear, you know, we keep them pretty much to ourselves. But I like the client artist connection. Some of my best friends that I've had for a long time are from tattooing them over the years, you know, I've tattooed a lot of rock bands and things like that. So just meeting friends along the way and listening to their story while you're giving them something, you know, permanent for the rest of their life. It's tattooing is one of the only things you can walk down a street and receive something so permanent and so meaningful. You know, haircuts will grow back, you know, but tattoos tell a story usually of somebody's life. And we get to hear that personally firsthand when we're doing them.
Now, the Red Tree Tattoo Gallery, I haven't visited, but you have a great virtual tour on your website.
Yeah.
It looks like quite the space. I mean, first of all, it's huge, but it's also beautifully decorated.
Thank you.
Great space.
Yeah, Red Tree Tattoo Gallery is Ohio's largest tattoo studio and art gallery. We have 11 artists right now. There's two levels to Red Tree Tattoo Gallery. And when you walk through it, it's just filled with nothing but original paintings, original art from like my artists, and other people I've collected over the years. Red Tree is a private tattoo studio. It's appointment only. We work on more of an artistic base with people and try to, you know, design full sleeves or back pieces or like custom tattoos rather than just walking in. A lot of my artists at Red Tree are also fine artists as well. So we have paint nights at Red Tree where we invite other tattoo studios and local painters to come and be a part of it as well. So, Red Tree is everything I wanted it to be. I originally started Stained Skin Tattoo Studio back in 1994 on High Street.
Okay.
And I sold that probably about 15 years ago. And I tattooed privately, started to develop my tattoo products, continued working on the Hell City Tattoo Fest. Then I opened up Red Tree Tattoo Gallery about 14 years ago, and it's been phenomenal. You know, and I've been able to combine Hell City Tattoo Festival, True Tattoo Supply, and Red Tree all under one facility. So it's been awesome.
Now, you're a busy guy. All those things you just mentioned. Are you still tattooing daily?
Actually, yes. Yesterday I was tattooing the coach of the Blue Jackets, the strength and conditioning coach.
Well.
So I'm very selective about the tattoo products that I take on now just because I have to dedicate a certain amount of time to all my businesses and travels and stuff like that too. So I'm still tattooing as much as I can. I don't tattoo like in the mid-90s, I was tattooing 10, 12 hours a day. Yeah. You know, nowadays I'll do 3 to 5 hours, but I'm still doing larger tattoo projects and painting a lot as well.
Do you have one single most memorable tattoo? Do you have a favorite tattoo? Is that hard to ask?
They're all my, like, I mean, the one I'm working on right now on Coach is one of my favorite sleeves. It's a Japanese sleeve with like a foo dog and dragons and stuff like that. So some of my favorite tattoos I've done on some of the rock stars and stuff too, like Kobe from Papa Roach.
Oh,
yeah, Jacoby
okay.
Shaddix.
Yeah.
Did his entire chest right here, and that's in the Rolling Stone Tattoo Nation book.
I'm going to have to look up a picture
of
him. Yeah.
Yeah. And then I did his whole forearm and stuff like that. So, I don't know. Every tattoo is my favorite.
The one you're working on right now is your favorite.
Yeah. Okay. So it's kind of the one you're putting your energy into is your favorite one at that time, I think.
Do you have a favorite tattoo trend? Because I know that tattooing has had trends over the years where everyone's getting the same thing.
Yeah. I mean, there's been a lot of trends over the years. Like back in the 90s, we were plagued by Tasmania Devil, the Taz tattoo.
Yeah. Did you do some of those?
Yes. I've done more than I would like to admit.
do you regret a few of them?
Yeah. But no, as far as favorite tattoos, I do more of a traditional American style and also Japanese style of tattooing. So that's kind of what I more gravitate towards.
This is Fascinating Ohio from All Sides on 89.7 NPR News. We're talking with Derb Morrison, owner of Red Tree Tattoo Gallery, Ohio's largest tattoo studio, and head organizer of the upcoming Hell City Tattoo Festival here in Columbus. So you're the one who puts together the Hell City Tattoo Festival.
I am.
Can you tell us a little bit about it? It's coming up soon in a couple of weeks, right?
Definitely. Yeah, I started Hell City. So it's coming up next weekend. So it's May 2nd through the 4th.
Oh, it's May already. Oh, my goodness.
Yeah. Okay. So it's on Star Wars weekend. May the 4th be with you. So we are kind of doing a Star Wars twist with it.
You're leaning into Star Wars?
Yeah.
All right.
So I started the Hell City Tattoo Fest here in Columbus in 2002. Mm. So we're coming up on 23 years now doing the festival here. And like when I started my studios, one of the points with Hell City Tattoo Fest was to bring a good convention with the really talented artists to Columbus. Columbus is a huge art city anyways, you know, with the Short North, lots of artists. And that's one thing that's always attracted me to Columbus as well. So showcasing tattooing at the highest levels here in Columbus, Ohio just made sense, you know. And it's not just a tattoo convention either. There's live acts. We have Anna and the Androids performing. We have burlesque acts, tattoo competitions that go on every day, live painting exhibitions with over 30 tattoo artists that are actually painting. So we can show you that we're artists like off the skin as well. We're not just tattoo artists. We're fine artists. So Hell City, it's influenced generations of, you know, current tattoo artists in this city. I'd say about every 8 years, the generation changes with tattooers. So we've been able to raise a lot of the tattooers here in Columbus with Hell City, you know. So they've been able to come over the years and take seminars, watch their favorite tattoo artists compete, win trophies. So it's been really influential, you know, with not just with Columbus and Ohio, but like Hell City is actually known worldwide as one of the better tattoo conventions going on. And we're one of the longest running conventions in the entire U.S.
And people can just come if they're just tattoo fans. Mm-hmm. They can come do it. It's not just for people who are artists, right?
Yeah, I want people to come. Like what I say is beyond television. Come beyond television. Experience tattooing on your own. Mm-hmm. You know, you could come there. The artists are there to tattoo anybody from the public. You know, so it's best if you want to get a tattoo, set an appointment, or get there early. Get in the chair with your favorite tattoo artist from Ink Master or whoever you see on television. Mm-hmm. But there's other things too that they can do. They can watch people painting. You know, but I tell people to come and experience tattooing, you know, on their own, you know, because, well, bring your friends.
Yeah.
But, you know, experience tattooing outside of watching it on television. Realize that it is a friendly crowd. It's just a bunch of artists that love tattooing, you know, and it's a celebration of body art.
Now, I was very intrigued by all the tattoo contests. I was reading some of the different themes. There's different contests, different themes each day. There's awards for, I mean, anything you can think of. Best hand or foot tattoo, best sleeve, best portrait. Tell me about, like, how do you decide the award for most unusual? Where does that?
Well, it's up to the judges. Yeah. We try to have judges for each category that specialize in thing. The most unusual is just wacky, wild stuff.
Something,
you know,
you've never seen before.
Yeah, a lot of it's going to be like funny stuff, you know, kind of comical tattoos or just something really weird, you know. So, I bring like tattoo artists onto the stage to judge. I don't have anybody that doesn't tattoo because I feel that's unfair. So, the judging is done by 5 artists and it's very selective. So we have a certain judging way that we do it, which actually the audience could watch people getting eliminated, who stays, what judge gives them the the card, you know, things like that. So competitions are one of the big things at Hell City because every artist wants to take home a trophy.
Now, and the artist wins the award, and the person standing up there is just their muse, right?
Yeah, exactly. We usually give a medallion as well, mm-hmm. so the collector can keep a medallion. Mm-hmm. And then typically the artist, tattooers, we work for the awards. We want that in our shop. So mm-hmm. it's common courtesy for the collector to give the artist the award, but we also make sure that the collector gets a, you know, a little take home award as well. So
yeah, so the tattooed person can walk around and say, "I have an award winning tattoo here."
Yeah, rather just give them the trophy and be like, "Man." So we try to think of everything. You know, over the years we've refined the show. We listen to the crowd and the attendees, you know, and the artists, and we've got a really, you know, really refined show that influences other shows nowadays, which is awesome.
I also want to know about how the best traditional tattoo. What's a traditional tattoo?
So American traditional tattooing is what you see a lot of, like, you know, old sailors and things like that. We get these, like, ships and eagles and skulls and all these, like, traditional tattoo imagery that you saw a lot of people get. So that's one of the styles that I prefer, you know, because I started tattooing so young that that was the, you know, the dominant style when I started tattoo was like American traditional. I've got into Japanese, which has all the, you know, the foundations, or more American traditional has Japanese foundations. So traditional tattooing is going to be, like I said, the eagles, heavy black shading, some color, then some open skin tones as well. So that's my favorite style. And I think that style lasts the longest in the skin, like visually.
Maybe you could consider in the future doing a best old school Tasmanian devil, you know?
Best Taz category.
Yeah, you can add, you just so you can lean back into
what's funny, somebody would probably be entering it still. Sure Taz is still alive out there somewhere.
Yeah, someone out there with a Taz tattoo from the 90s is going to be like, is the best one.
What would happen if I got up there and I had one?
Oh, I don't know, do you?
Yeah, nope.
All right. You're also the inventor of True Tubes and True Grips,
yes,
right? Tools used in tattooing. Can you tell us more about how you came to this products part of your business?
Definitely. Being an old school tattooer, I saw the industry change into disposable back in the day, you know, and I hadn't developed any products at that time, but I wanted a tube that was disposable, that ran like a traditional steel tube that I used to tattoo with, you know? So I went on to develop, like Frankenstein parts together and developed what's called True Tubes. True Tubes are the first disposable tattoo tube with a steel tip in tattooing. And we sell through True Tattoo Supply. I later went on to invent True Grips as well, which are memory foam grip covers to absorb damaging vibrations in the hand, you know, for the artist.
So to help your hand, I see. Yeah,
okay. Widen your grip. Those have become insanely popular in tattooing. A lot of people ripped off that product and stuff, but it's nice to know that I influenced and my products will be a part of tattooing forever. So with that, I've gone, you know, I have 11 different products that I've invented, you know, some of them have patents and stuff like that too, but that's when went on to develop True Tattoo Supply. And now I distribute my products pretty much around the world to different supply companies. So it's been an amazing career because I, you know, when I get into these things, my heart's in it. And then you're hoping that it's going to take off, you know, and everything that I do, you know, seems to resonate really well with the artist or with the attendees, you know, and the products have taken off too. So it's been an amazing career.
Yeah, I feel compelled to ask you what's next, but you have so much going on. What's next?
Well, I mean, I also live out in Las Vegas as well. Mm-hmm. So I have a home out in Las Vegas. So I'll probably try to do a Red Tree Tattoo Gallery out there eventually. Mm-hmm. You know, right now I just tattoo out there and train jiu-jitsu and it's like a little vacation home. Get away from the chaos here, the heavy amount of work. So, but in the future, I don't know. You know, like right now, I'm been focusing a lot on my paintings, so much that I'm selling them more than I can like hold on to them. Mm-hmm. So my goal is just to keep everything going. Really, you know, I'm not looking to add anything more to my palette. Essentially, I want to keep what I have going on now, keep it successful, keep it at the highest levels. At the same time, continuing to tattoo and, you know, paint.
And I noticed on the Hell City Tattoo Festival website, I mean, you have it booked out for years. So this is continuing for a long time,
yeah,
too.
I think we have contracts through 2029 currently.
You also have is it like a sister festival in Arizona?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yep. So we originally started doing it in Columbus, Ohio. And then I've always had a connection with Phoenix, Arizona. Mm-hmm. And Phoenix is always, it's been a huge tattoo and modification city. So, you know, we brought Hell City there, I think 2008. And it goes on there every year as well. So I actually do Hell City twice a year.
Do you run the one in Arizona too?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, that one has a whole different
feel. I want to be like, what don't you do? Yeah.
I mean, my team is amazing. We got Jasmine, Jules, and Jessica, you know, my three J's, and they really helped me out a lot too. But the Phoenix show has a whole different feel. So the Columbus one is like booming downtown, two levels, three ballrooms. Phoenix is at a resort, so it's like luxury with pool party, like the world's largest tattoo pool party, you know, things like that. So both of them have their own little flavor.
Yeah.
About 4 months apart is the Phoenix one. But yeah, that's been going 2008 since that. Yeah.
Well, in the just minute we have left, how does it feel to kind of put Columbus on the tattooing map? Are you proud
Columbus.
Of your city?
Yeah. I love Columbus. I love the people here, the community, the art, the food. I mean, Columbus is in my heart, you know, and I've always been proud to spotlight tattooing, especially with how many shops are in Columbus now, and me being the sixth shop ever in Columbus to seeing over 100 shops now. Mm. I feel like I've done something right and represented tattooing for it to grow and boom in Columbus. And I really like the Columbus community because it embraces art, you know, and they've always embraced tattooing. So it's a very, you know, open-minded city, and I love it.
Well, thank you, Derb Morrison, owner of Red Tree Tattoo Gallery, and also the head organizer of the upcoming Hell City Tattoo Festival here in Columbus. Thanks for joining us.
Thank you, Amy.
This has been Fascinating Ohio from All Sides. I'm Amy Jurevich. This is 89.7 NPR News.